You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Welcome in to the Bite Me podcast. And before we get started with Captain Scott Null, who is sitting right across from me, and Captain Kayla McCumber, who is also sitting right across from me, and get to all your questions and all your topics, my number one question is, what the heck is going on? Man, what a wild week of behavior. I know it wasn't our Bite Me listeners. They're too good for this. But we got guys posting on our website about duck hunters shooting over their heads when they're about to do a little drift or a wade. We've got guys trying to game the tournament, you know, putting fish on stringers in the reeds and trying to come back and get them. And we've got, of course, also posted on our website, really sad. I know you guys commented on it. I know you did, Scott. Guys, you know, going through the whole guide process, going out on the water with a guide, having a good time, and then stiffing him when it comes to the payment. What is going on out there, Scott? I mean, it's not that hard to do these things the right way.
Nope. just be a good person, man. It's not that hard.
That has happened to you. I saw you post that. Yep. Getting stiffed.
That was a friend of mine, Greg Byrne, that hosted that. And guy just basically gave him $140 at the end of the trip after giving him a $100 deposit on a $600 trip. I'll put the rest of the money in the bank, run my card later.
Yeah.
And then didn't put the money in the bank. So he's out.
Yeah, he's out. And then at least the picture's on the website too, so people can see who this cat is.
I had the same thing. You know, a guy had given me the $200 deposit, and then at the end of the trip, handed me a big wad of cash, you know, and I'm polite. I don't want to count it right in front of him, you know, and so I put it in my pocket, and it was a 20 on the outside of a big wad, you know, so I got home and opened it up, and it was fives and tens on the inside, and it was not quite enough.
Not quite enough.
About half.
Caleb, I know you saw
the same problem.
Yeah, I know you saw those redfish that somebody put on a stringer. I guess it was down south because it was in some mangroves, and I hadn't even thought of that tactic. But I'm sure you've seen that before, hiding some redfish. Maybe they caught them the afternoon before or the evening before for some tournament or something. But the jig was kind of up on that.
Oh, it happens more often than it doesn't, to be honest.
Really?
That's something that's went on. There's people put them in traps and boxes and all kinds of stuff. It's one of the reasons that if there's not a poly involved, there's about a 90% chance that I'm not even showing up to a tournament. Mm-hmm. The people's need to win and post on Facebook that they did good in something outweighs their morals in a lot of situations.
And that's kind of what, you know, I wanted the message to be here for our listeners, our Bite Me listeners. It's bizarre. It's wrong. And, you know, it's not that important. I mean, I know guides like to do we've talked about the table shots and, hey, I want a tournament, and maybe that gives them some more business. But if you get caught, your business is over. I mean, right, Scott?
Yeah, and it's also a felony in Texas. If the prize money is a certain amount, I don't remember exactly what the amount is, but there's a felony, and felony charge can be involved in it.
Well, how do y'all stand on the duck hunting question that was on the Bite Me podcast? That was an interesting one. I think I have the gist of it here, but he was basically rolling up on a spot, and some duck hunters started getting pretty upset. He said, we fished Saturday about 2 hours on our first wade. stepped on a stingray. Oh, no, that was the stingray question. But basically he said, you know, the duck hunter started really getting after him. We'll get to the stingray question. But it was it's been a wild week on the Bite Me group page on Facebook. Where do you stand on that?
It's, get used to it. There's just no other way to put it. Mm-hmm. I say this lightheartedly, but whenever I say that I've never been duck hunting, it's not because I don't want to go duck hunting. It's because I have developed that much of a distaste for the situations you get in with duck hunters. I've been shot by them 3 times. I've been hit with pellets. They seemed, I don't know what it is. I think that big trout areas and duck areas are require the same amount of stuff, because everywhere that a lot of us fish year round, it seems like that's where the duck blind shows. But there's 5 miles of shoreline, that duck blind shows up on that muddy drain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some duck hunters are pretty cool. Maybe I've committed a foul here and there. I was trolling a shoreline one time, and the dude stood up 10 feet from me and started yelling at me, but he didn't have a spread out, nothing. This guy's camouflage is just that good.
You didn't see him.
I've waded up beside them where I was 20 yards from them, and they shot over my head, and there wasn't a duck anywhere, but it stopped my heart because I didn't know they were there. It just, if you're going to hunt in public salt water, be prepared for duck hunters. And to take it one step further, I was fishing down in Cottons years ago, which, if you guys don't know Cottons, it's a very long, very skinny cut that goes back into Matagorda West Bay. And I'm standing about halfway back in it, and these ducks, they're flying down the shoreline, and they're hanging a left and flying over my head. And the dude behind me is just murdering these ducks. Me standing there did nothing. In fact, if you want to get completely logical with it, ducks see boats and fishermen all year long. We're in the same dang spot. So if a duck sees a boat and a dude fishing in a duck's mind, you would think that a duck would go, everything's cool here, I'm going to hang out here. If I'm a duck flying around and there's not a boat or a fisherman in sight, I might get a little bit skeptical of the situation.
This is true. This is true. Scott, you know, Scott, I've never that was an incredible story right there, Caleb. I've had them yell at me, like, really just not like mean or they were going to shoot over my head or anything. But just like, hey, we're here, and I just move right along. And it goes back to our point of, you know, if you can only fish in one spot, you know, you probably need to find some other spots or work on that corner of the, you know, that corner of the bay or whatever. But still, the duck hunter, I mean, we have a lot of fishermen that are duck hunters, you know, and listening to the podcast, it just seems that relationship has never been a good one.
Now, the problem is, like Caleb said, a lot of the places we like to fish, you know, especially me poling, you know, I pole back lakes, I pole shorelines, you know, that's where the duck hunters are.
Mm-hmm.
I typically know, you know, where the duck hunters are setting up, and I just avoid those areas. Back when I used to do greens a lot, I had areas that I knew the duck hunters weren't going to, and I knew places I knew they were going. So I'd go fish those early, away from where they were going to be. Mm-hmm. And by 9 o'clock, they're generally done. Yeah. So then I'd move into the places where they had been hunting earlier.
You know, you find out where they're hanging out a couple of weeks after season starts. But yeah,
yeah, you do.
You know, the back lakes that I fish, I figure out, because they'll move their blinds around or whatnot. And then you'll have your surprise guy that's just sitting in the grass somewhere. But I had one morning where I'm running down the south shoreline of East Matagorda Bay, and it's big trout season. I'm trying to get to my spot. You know, I'm 20 minutes after daylight, and I'm going to be honest. If there's things I know less than how to catch a flounder, it's what a duck is. When people invite
me, I'm horrible at that. I'm horrible at that.
I get invited all the time, and I'm like, how federally, in a situation do you want to be with me? because I can't hit it. I shoot a shotgun really well. I'll kill it. I don't know what it is, but I'm running down the shoreline, and my wife dated a hardcore duck hunter for years and years and years. And so my wife can identify ducks.
Yeah.
And she had taught me what a northern pintail looked like. And she had said something about they're kind of rare, which I don't know if they are or not, but she said that. And I'm running down, there's a dead one floating about, I don't know, 100 yards off the shoreline. There's some duck hunters over here. And it's a northern pintail. And I think to myself, they probably want that bird. The wind was blowing away from them. So I pick up the bird, And I go maybe 150 yards to their east, and I'm just nosing my boat up on the shoreline. I'm going to throw the duck up on the shoreline for them, right? Well, as I'm doing it, they shoot twice at me. It hits me and hits my boat.
My goodness.
So I kept the bird. I threw it in reverse. I went in front of them. I'm not a fan of wasting game in this situation. However, I dropped it in front of my motor. I said, Beachy the duck, and gave them two birds they didn't shoot at. At the end of the day, the fisherman's going to be there and gone. Chill out. It's not the end of the world. You'll be okay. If they're messing your spread up, I get it. But if we're 75 yards away from you trying to catch a fish, we're not going to mess you up. And if we are, if we see that we're flaring ducks, let's get out of here. Let's move with this guy.
And it's common sense stuff, Scott. I want to get to the rest of the podcast, and I want to actually talk to Camille here in a second about Heroes in the Water. We mentioned it last week, but what is our listeners listen to this podcast for, tips and advice. We know why, and how to's and techniques and tactics and all that with fishing. What do you tell them, many of whom also are duck hunters, about that relationship that is really strained over the years?
Well, number one, shooting over their heads is illegal. Don't do it. It's also illegal to go running up into their duck spread. If you just start doing that, then they can call the game warden and you can get filed on for hunter harassment. It's been done in the past. Mm-hmm. My whole thing is just avoid it. If you see decoys out, don't even go near them. If two guys stand up and they start hollering at you, just steer off, wave at them, and steer away.
That's what I did. Yeah, like, okay, I didn't see you. Yeah,
didn't see you there, you know. And then they all holler, well, my decoys are right there. Well, real ducks are out there too.
Real ducks. me as a fisherman, we've long ago established I like to follow real ducks and see where they're pooping.
Yep. Y'all know my decoy story where I stalked one of those flapping wing ones all the way across a lake because I thought it was a bird working redfish. Yeah. I've told that story on here before. Some of those decoys are good.
They're very good. But yeah, I'm with you, Scott. Just move on, figure out. It help. Maybe even it'll help you become a better fisherman. This is the Bite Me Podcast. I wanted to get right into that off the top. So let's get into the particulars right now on the podcast. Subscribe if you can. Anywhere you get podcasts. I shared some numbers with you, Scott. That was pretty dang cool. I finally got some real good data on how this podcast is performing. I don't know if I sent it to you, Caleb, I will, but it's 85 countries. And look, some of them are one person, but this podcast has been heard. I got all the analytics in 38 states, obviously most around the Gulf Coast, most in Texas and Louisiana, but all the Gulf Coast, but 38 states. And then I was going through the day and it's at 85 countries. Canada is like 376 or something listeners last time. And I'm like, what is going on? It makes me very proud of the podcast. It does also kind of open your eyes to how many people everywhere have access to fishing information and the things that we like to talk about, whether it's trout or whatever. I mean, I sent you a text, hey, let's go trout fishing in Angola. That was one of the places where people were listening.
I was looking at the list of countries. It was crazy. Norway and just all over the place. Some of them I could get, Middle East. We've got oil field guys from here that are over there working.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. But Angola?
Yeah.
Gordon?
Get your personal best trout in Angola, Caleb.
I have a YouTube subscriber from Chechnya, if that's even a place anymore.
I don't know if Chechnya was on our list, but just about, it was 85 countries. It was pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, y'all, when I get as popular as you guys, I'm going to do something cool.
Sure. But yeah, it's good. So thanks to the listeners. Subscribe everywhere. I also found it really interesting, and maybe I'm giving away too much information here, but we're all friends here, all our listeners and everybody on the group page. iTunes, man, 75% of our listeners download on iTunes. So you can download there. You can download on Spotify. You can download on Google Podcasts. And then they had a whole list of other places where people have downloaded our podcast. So you guys are doing great with the questions and the topics. We're trying to tell you everything we know. I'm more of just, kind of the grumpy old dude in the balcony telling you what I think, but Caleb and Scott have all the information. And Camille Knoll, the brains behind the operation, has some information for us. Camille, wanted to get you on because we mentioned Heroes on the Water last week, and it's an ongoing thing. And I feel as if we kind of butchered it. Like, we're like, yeah, it's cool. Here's the website. This is what they do. Scott did a good job. But we all kind of know Heroes on the Water. But set us straight on what the latest is and what some of the good things on going on before we move on with the podcast.
Well, first, I have to address that what Heroes on the Water is. Some of us do know, not everybody does. So Heroes on the Water is a volunteer-ran organization that has 58 chapters in 27 states. Each of those chapters are volunteer groups. We take veterans, first responders, and their families kayak fishing. So it is part of a therapeutic program. We introduce them to the out of doors, kayak fishing, the therapeutic benefits of being out on the water. And the, you know, that safe adrenaline rush of catching a fish kind of replaces the adrenaline rush that they got in dangerous situations. Mm-hmm. So it gives them a better memory. So right now we're running our second annual Jim Dolan Memorial Tournament. Jim was our founder. We lost him a couple of years ago, but we continue this to remember him and all of his efforts and his vision. Mm-hmm. Right now, the tournament is in process. It started on September 11th, and it runs through this weekend, October 10th. We do still have raffles and T-shirts and things like that. So on the heroesonthewater.org website, mm-hmm. go to events. And then click on the Jim Dolan Memorial Tournament, and you'll scroll down, see the T-shirt graphic, click on it, and it'll take you to the raffle items. One of those items just happens to be a framed Scott Null photo.
Wow!
Yeah,
he's got his. We know how those are.
Yeah, he's got his midnight windmill photo, so it's a really cool photo out there. But we're always looking for volunteers. We're always looking for participants. We're obviously always looking for donors. Yeah. So if anybody has any questions, hit me up.
All right. You did a much good. He told a great story last week. Scott did, but a very good job laying that out. We hope all the listeners get in on that. And it is obviously another booming success. I know it will be with you there. What else you got real quick?
One more thing. We do have two volunteer ran chapters here. We have one in Matagorda and we have one in Galveston. Mm-hmm. We are also looking to start one on the north side of Houston. So if anybody's up in the Spring, Magnolia, Conroe area, Perfect. I'd love to get a group of volunteers together to start a chapter up north.
And they can find you relatively easily. But just for the record, where do you want them to reach out if they're listening right now and want to reach out?
Camille.null@heroesonthewater.org.
There you go. All right. Camille.null@heroesonthewater.org.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Really good stuff. Let's get to some of the other topics that really come from our listeners every week. And we'll go from there. But while she mentioned your prints, I do want to mention three really good things going on right now. How about Knock and Tail? They are back with us. Knock and Tail lures. You guys know that I use those with the rattle in the tail, mycoastoutdoors.com. I got them right here. I got them right here on my desk. I got two more big packages that I'm going to be using. Knock and Tail is back with the offer for our listeners. Mike Acrylic and all those guys, they know, they listen to Bite Me too. And they know we are a good community on the Bite Me group page on Facebook. So you go to mycoastoutdoors.com. And you put in Bite Me 20. One word or maybe two words or three words or whatever will work, but it's Bite Me 20 and you get 20% off. It's a really good lure. You guys know I use it as well as I wanted to also mention, since she talked about that, Scott, ScottNullPhotography.com for all the Bite Me gear and, of course, your prints as well. We got more to cover on that. But let's dig in on some of these topics. Bull red season, you know, it was interesting. And Caleb, I'll start with you. Both you guys, both these people, Caleb McCumber and Captain Scott Knoll, are such good red fishermen, I think, in different ways right now. And that even it makes it better. But, you know, it's not just the flounder that are, quote, running, Caleb. I mean, you know, we're up against, you know, bull reds. That was the question I got. Someone said, hey, I think the spawn is on, isn't it? And let's dig into what to look for in terms of actually wanting that big, giant drag on pull on your drag outside of, hey, try the beachfront. You know, what are you telling them?
Well, first things first, it really depends on what bay system you're in. You're not going to go to East Matagorda Bay and find very many bulls. West Bay, once you get down closer towards the jetties, can be better. East Galveston can be really good. You have to be in an area where they can get in at, and what those have in common seems is a good pass, a good jetty. But I've been seeing several videos on Facebook the last couple of days where those schools, they're up, they're pushing down shorelines, they're, you know, they're mid bay, they're not hard to find. They usually make a pretty big wake. It's the calmer the water is, the more obvious it's going to be. You see, anytime I see ribbon fish jumping, I'm all over that. Birds, you know, over here, Matagorda, I'm really looking for seagulls and whatnot. In Galveston, I'm looking for seagulls and frigates. But whenever those, when those bulls school up, if you're in an area where you know that they're at and you commit your day to finding them, you have a pretty good shot. There are days when it's absolutely perfect and they won't come up. But whenever they are, it is not hard to miss. I mean, a lot of the time, this big whitewaters, it's pandemonium, it's excitement. There's really nothing out there for me that I enjoy as much as whenever the bulls school up and start doing their thing.
Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, there's two different things happening right now. You've got this year's class from the bays that have reached that 28 to 30-inch range. They live in the bays as juveniles up until that point, about 5 years, 6 years old. And those fish start schooling up in the bays. Those are the ones you find working on the shorelines, and then big, huge schools just off the shoreline. Down in Mansfield, we used to fish for them all the time, just inside the East Cut, out on the flats, and there'd be these massive, massive schools. And they were all identical cookie cutter fish, you know, 28 to 30 inches, just a lot of fun. Then they move offshore. The ones that you're getting at the jetties and on the beachfront, those are the older fish that have been around a while, and they're going to be the ones that are spawning. They'll spawn near the pass on an incoming tide, and it's just a big aggregate spawn.
Yeah.
And they drop it, and they feed pretty heavy in between those spawning times. So your chances of finding that big school up on top doing its thing, pretty good this time of year if you hang out any of the passes.
Right.
And inside and outside.
One thing I wanted to point out, because Caleb touched on it, you just did again. It's not hard to see bull reds if you're looking for the right. I mean, sometimes you don't have to be looking at anything but the surface of the water. They're just, you know, swimming over, diving over each other and everything else. But you can really tell when bull reds are coming through, just the movement of the water, the kind of, it's almost like a ripple wake that's real big, and they're swirling, or they're right up on top of the water. And then the other thing is we've kind of had a love-hate relationship. I'm going to start with you, Scott, on pelicans. Sometimes they just lie. Sometimes they're not the best tell for what exactly is under. But pelicans can be really telling when the bull reds are going as well, correct?
Yeah, if you're in a bull red area, you know, around the pass, and you start seeing a bunch of pelicans start diving, they're diving on bait.
Yeah.
And the bull reds are going to find that bait if they haven't already. Sometimes it's the fish push them to the top, and that's when the pelicans find it. Other times the pelicans are already on that bait. One other way that you can find them too, if they're not coming to the top, is with, you know, your electronics. Mm-hmm. They make these huge schools and are not hard to see on electronics. I've also heard them drumming at night, you know, through the
boat. That's pretty cool.
Through the hull of the boat, you can hear that drumming noise. I've heard it some in the daytime, but it's been more at night.
Mm-hmm. Caleb, you know, he also said, okay, what do I throw, you know, outside of, you know, cutting mullet and or something you're seeing out there. Do you have any particular, because when they're feeding as far as I'm concerned.
Whenever you're fishing, whenever you're on a school of those things, if it flies, it dies.
Yeah.
I'm more into, I take that back. If I'm feeling like having fun, I'll throw a topwater just because I like seeing the blowups and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But if I'm wanting to catch several, I'm going to throw a small plastic on a jig head just because it's easy to get that hook out of them and get back into the school.
Right.
But it does. If they're there, they're going to eat it, period.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And one last thing, Caleb, before we move on to kind of, you know, catching your own bait, which kind of ties in and going to fish finding baits, which were another couple of questions. You look a little bit despondent today. And I saw you looking at your Facebook and all of a sudden your face got, you know, kind of drawn out. What's going on?
Man, I tell you what, I have been about a month into not being able to tag Scott in any post. And then I my buddies are like, why can't you tag him? Jeremy Compton came on and then tagged him right there. He's like, look, he's very taggable. And I just made a post, you know, that it's good to be back with you guys. And I was able to tag you, John, very easily. I couldn't tag Scott because turns out he's unfriended me.
I don't know what the heck happened there.
Yeah,
I went through there and I was looking at I blocked somebody that was.
Yeah, Caleb.
And then all of a sudden, as I'm looking at the list of blocks, Caleb's name's on the top of the block list.
What'd you do to him? What Caleb do to you?
I know exactly what happened. I got a text from him a while back, and he became a top fan of Captain Caleb TV. They sent him the badge, and he just blocked it off because he just couldn't admit
it. I don't want this stinking badge. We don't need no stinking badges. Oh, my goodness. That was good. All right. So definitely wanted to get that in. So we talked about bettering your odds for the bull res and what to look for right there. You know, a lot of times right now,
something too on that.
Yeah.
At them. Have fun with it.
That's what Caleb was saying. You know, just have you know, learn, you know, see them blowing up, get them going.
One of my favorites is that Russell Lure popper. It's a tuna popper. I put single hooks on it. Like Caleb was saying, so you can get back into it quicker instead of having those two trebles and, nothing beats that. You start popping that thing and you can bring them up even if they're not showing on top.
Yeah.
But they've blown up and now they've gone down. You can throw that big popper out there, start making some foot tall splashes and they'll show back up.
That's pretty sweet. What about like sort of the biology behind it? I'm not biology, behavior, Scott. This is one of your, you know, your areas of great expertise is, you know, why this is happening right now. We know they're spawning. Where are they spawning? How are those babies going to get back in to the bay just with tides or whatever? We've addressed it in the past, but I think it's worth revisiting while we're here because it's quite the phenomenon.
It's around the full moon and the dark moon. That's when you have your biggest tides. If we get a little tropical storm coming in, it'll be during that. They want their little ones to float as far back into the marsh and the bays as possible. You know, that's, it's just nature at work. Mm-hmm. And the bigger the tide, the stronger that pull is coming in, the higher the water gets, the further back those eggs go and they hatch out way back in the marsh. Further back in there they are, the better the chance they have to surviving and avoiding predators.
Mm-hmm. And it's always fun to watch. All right, so that leads to the discussion of another question we had, and I like the way they put it. Let's say, you know, finding your go-to fish finding baits. We're out of the reds, we're out of the jetties, we're on the bay, whatever bay system that may be up and down the Gulf Coast here, and we're going fishing. You, me, and Scott, Caleb. All right, we're going fishing. We're on a boat together. We pulled up on a spot that you deem fishy. What would you recommend the three of us throw and why? Because, you know, I'm not saying that you've already scouted that area and you know the fish are there. You are scouting that area. It just looks fishy. Somebody wanted to know how we would approach fish finding baits, you know, when we're just looking at a fishy area.
I'm probably going to throw a topwater almost every time. It'll do one or two things. It'll scare them and get a wake or a mud boil. Or they'll blow up on it, or I'll catch them. The tournament that Daniel and I won in Sabine, that's what I did all week long. I didn't, I, I didn't want to catch very many fish. I've red fished long enough that I can look at blowups and get an idea whether that fish is even close to what I'm looking for sometimes. But a topwater is what I'm throwing, redfish or trout, either one, if I'm just scouting, because not only will you get some slaps or some blowups or whatnot, but it's something that you can throw and retrieve and cover a lot of area really fast with, versus a plastic where if you're not working it the right way, you might need to try something different. You need to work it slower, whatever. And then plus if a fish misses your plastic, you really don't know it. So a topwater is going to be my scout bait most of the time.
Very similar to that. You know, if the three of us are on one boat, and look, you guys know more fishing than I do, but if you asked me what should we throw, I would put one of you on a topwater. I would put one of you off the bottom with your favorite bait. And I would be throwing the popping cork that I'm want to throw a lot, for the same reason that you're talking about, Caleb. If we're trying to find fish, I think I can cast that a mile. I think it attracts the fish, and you sometimes you get a real good gauge of it. I call it waking them up. I mean, if I throw a popping cork out there, I say, let's wake them up. I mean, and on my boat, people have heard me say that a million times. Scott, what is your strategy of like, all right, here we go. We're doing a drift. We're doing whatever it is. Maybe we get out of the boat and wade. Three different dudes. What are you throwing to increase the odds of making sure you find fish?
Pretty much what Caleb said. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm going to throw a topwater almost every time. If they're aggressive, they're going to blow it up. If they're not aggressive, they're going to swirl behind it. They start swirling behind it, I'm going to have the backup coming with a soft plastic. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to start catching fish. But it's a real good fish finder, because you can cover so much water.
Right. And
you're attracting fish, whereas a soft plastic, you know, it's got to go by the fish. You know, they're not coming from a ways off. I've thrown topwater and seen lakes coming from 10, 15 feet away. It just attracts them in.
It absolutely does.
Throwing a bigger net.
Yeah, yeah. What is the bait doing right now? Are we still big on shrimp? Because another question that I got, Scott, I'll start with you, is the fellow likes to quote match the hatch by throwing his cast net. I throw a cast net. I'm not great at it. I'm not awful at it. In terms of what the bait is doing right now, let's talk to some of our live bait, throwers here. Is it still shrimp for you, or what are you looking at? Do you throw the cast net?
Everything's all about shrimp. I am not a cast net guy. Yeah. I'm terrible with throwing a cast net. It's embarrassing. But the shrimp they should be still in the grass, maybe moving to the edges of the grass now in the marshes. They're going to, as time goes on, we get another couple of good fronts blow in. We're going to start seeing them gather up more in the middle of the lakes.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are already starting to move out. You're getting a little bird action out on the open bay. That's the early movers. There's still going to be a lot of shrimp back in the marshes. And those will start moving out later October into November. I've had good schooling activity on shrimp all the way up to Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Depends on the weather. Now, if we get one of those real hard fronts and it blows all the water out and it gets down in the 30s overnight, every now and then we'll get one of those mid-November. That'll end it.
Right.
That pushes them all on out.
What are you seeing? What are you hearing right now in terms of bait? The same thing, a lot of shrimp, Caleb?
Yeah, a lot of shrimp. They're starting to show up. It's going to get better and better. I'm hearing that the birds are starting to work here and there, which is another indicator that the shrimp are showing up. And like Scott said, shrimp's going to be king until it just blasts and gets dead cold out there. I don't think there's going to be anything that really beats it, because that's what everything's going to be zeroed in on.
Mm-hmm. Here's a fun topic that I think both you guys have seen a lot on your boats respectively. Caleb, I know you're hot and heavy on the tournament scene right now. And we were asked about what are common mistakes that we've done or that we've seen when the big ones are on. And it's so frustrating, because you spend all this time, sometimes weeks, sometimes years, trying to catch that fish that is out there for you. You finally get them on the boat and you make the common mistakes of losing the big one, and I thought it was a really good topic, because we've all lost fish, and it's not always our fault, but there are things that happen when that could have been avoided? What do you see the most out there?
Panic, sheer panic. And I've been fortunate enough, and I'm talking trout, but sheer panic. I've been lucky to, I've landed, you know, a handful of big ones myself, and I've seen a lot of big ones get landed. And the overall success rate often depends on the guy's ability to stay calm. What I see is they get that fish close to them, and they see it as their personal best. They're super excited. well, the thing is they're trying to rush getting it on the boga or rush getting it in the net, which the net's a whole different topic. I personally won't carry a net, but they try rushing it. And what I want to do, I want that trout's head to stay below water, and I want her to swim circles around me until she's calmed down. And then a thing that I do that I don't know that it's really widely known. Heck, I don't even know if it's effective, but I do it is whenever I get that fish close to me, I'll touch it once. I have no intention of landing that fish. I'm going to touch it though. And usually when I do, it's going to give me one last little squirt. And then after that is whenever I can get my boga in their mouth pretty easy. Whenever you have that fish up close to you and you've got your bogas trying to get it in its mouth, don't try to force that thing. That fish every now again is going to open its mouth and gasp. And when it does, that's when you need to be ready with your boga. Don't try to pry its lip open with it. None of that kind of stuff. If you're in a boat.
Scott's laughing. He knows he's seen all these things.
Yeah. If you're in a boat, you know, just stay calm. Give your net guy a chance. Try to have a net guy that doesn't suck, if that's at all possible. You know, whenever I'm guiding, I'm all about the customers having their experience. So whenever two brothers or a father and a son or buddies or whatever out there, and one's got a big fish on, the other one says, I'll net it. I usually know it's probably a bad idea, but I want these two guys to have their memory together. Yeah. Don't try to net that sucker by his tail first. You touch him in the butt, you got a whole another problem. Yep. Don't stick the net in the water and just hold it there and expect either A, the fisherman to drag it in the net, or B, the fish to swim in the net. Because you're making something for that line to hang up on. You're making something, you know, it's a quick dip head first. But the number one thing is don't panic. I get comments all the time. Heck, even Mosley told me this years ago. He said, man, when you catch a good fish, I don't even know it because you're not making any sounds. You're not excited. And that, I mean, I'm excited on the inside, but just fight the fish. Let the fish play itself out. Don't play it out till it's dead. But that fish is going to calm down. And if it's meant to be caught, you're going to catch it.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Man, that's one of the best pieces of advice. I mean, I agree with everything you said, but the way you put it, it was just perfect. I hope people can go back and listen to that again and again. Scott, go ahead, because I know you were laughing and smiling the whole time. There is a panic element, as he just laid out perfectly. There's also the... I've done this. We've all done it. You turn the reel down, you know, when you're reaching with the net or whatever, and it just, or turn the rod or whatever it may be. What are some other elements here?
Thumbing that spool. Yeah. I've seen that done so many times. Yeah. They don't want it to take off again. So they'll thumb the spool, let him go, you know, let the drag work for you. I've seen that one many times where it pulls loose. Redfish too. I've seen it with, you know, if with a red, you got a lot better chance because of thicker mouth. But that trout's been wallowing around, and that hook is loose. Mm-hmm. Very seldom. How many times, Caleb, have you netted a trout and had the lure fall out of its mouth?
Oh, plenty.
It seems like it's almost every single time.
Especially big ones, which really blows you away.
Right. They've been head shaking. They've been doing all that. Every time they do that, they open that little hole up just a little bit more around that hook. So you got to maintain the pressure on it and don't force it.
Just take it easy.
I'm going to let them run every single time. And in fact, whenever I set the hook, when I'm trout fishing, primarily big trout fishing, my drag is loose. I can grab it with one hand and easily pull drag out of it. But I have I've done it long enough that whenever I feel my quirky get thumped, without even thinking about it, I thumb my spool and I set the hook and then I let that spool go again. Mm-hmm. When that fish is, if I've been fighting that fish, and it's an over an exaggeration, but if I've been fighting that fish 15 minutes and it gets up to me and it wants to run, it's going to get to run. Once it quits, when it quits doing that run and it gets less strong, then I might put a little bit of pressure. But what I do more so than thumb the spool is my rod's in my left hand while I'm fighting this fish. I'll grab the rod probably about 2 foot, maybe 1 foot up in front of the reel where I've got the line in my hand. So if the fish runs, the line can run through it, but I can kind of throttle a little bit. But I'll grab that rod with my left hand and I'll put my hand up over my head to where my rod's shorter. And now I've got the leverage to bring that fish in closer to me where I'm trying to put the bogey in it from a foot away instead of doing the whole, I've got my left arm out as far as I can. I got my right arm out as far as I can. And I'm over here looking like the Da Vinci perfect man, trying to get a piece of this fish. So yeah, definitely. I mean, don't rush it. That's the number one thing. Just don't rush it.
And Scott, you said something about the redfish. It's a little easier because you know, their mouths are thicker and you can set, and the hook can be in there real good. But sometimes that redfish, the hook isn't even in there really. You're feeling weight and you're getting a fight, and you haven't even really hooked the redfish all the way, correct?
Yeah, I've seen it every now and then where they open their mouths. But most of the time, you've got at least some purchase on it.
Yeah.
There's a reason we call them rubber lips.
Yep. There's no question. Go ahead, Caleb.
When you're fighting a redfish, after you've done it a while, I think Scott can attest to this too. If that lure isn't in there good, you can kind of feel a pop, pop, pop every once in a while where that, like, especially a topwater where one set of hooks is let go and it usually catches them again somewhere else, but you'll feel the pop up. Now, sometimes it's just the fish's fins going over it, but a redfish, especially with a jig head, if you stick him good, that jig head's usually out the side of his face and he's probably not coming off, especially if you're using a good jig head. But you can feel it. A redfish, you can be a bit tougher with. Heck, those tournament fish, we thumb the spool and
push
them as fast as we can.
And Caleb, I'm just sitting here being honest. I've never done what you're talking about, wade fish and catching a trout. Touch him first. I think that sounds very logical. Okay, Scott, have you ever done that?
That's what I do with tarpon too.
Oh, really?
I don't touch the tarpon necessarily, but I touch the leader. I'll pop that leader every time when one comes up, his tarpon comes up and lays over on its side, I reach out and touch the leader. I do the same thing with trout. Touch the fish, but I touch the line and give them a little thump there.
It's almost like you desensitize them a little bit. Like the shock value wears off after you do that.
I'm going to do it. Hopefully I catch a big trout, but
it's a one finger tickle in the ribs. Most of the time, there's not much to it.
Yeah. It just makes a lot of sense. Cause how many times have you either netted or tried to grab a trout and it's that one more big giant? Well, if you just touch them and you still have them on there, it might be pretty good. How about that? That's good stuff. I'm going to try that myself. Well, now all I got to do is go catch a big trout. All right. So Scott, this was a kayaking centric question, but we're going to expand it just a little bit here because the question is, I'm curious about boating and kayaking in inclement weather. What's the threshold for whether to launch or not? Then when you're on the water, at what point do you head back to the launch? Is it safe to temporarily take refuge on a spoil island? Well, we know you and Dean have, and wait out the storm. Love the show. Listen every week when I'm at work. But we can expand this, and I did when I sent you guys the rundown, knowing when to call it. But let's start with the kayak version first.
It's all fluid, man. I mean, electricity is a no-go, period. End of story. Yeah, if it's a storm that's got a lot of electricity in it, I'm not going. I'll take an L on that one. Wind. Caleb and I have fished in 50 plus mile an hour winds.
I'm sorry.
Was there electricity, Scott? Was there electricity?
Yes, there was electricity. It didn't come until later, and we were already on the water and didn't know it was coming. It was also a tornado. But
okay, so maybe this is not a good idea asking you two guys about this. No one would call it. Hell.
Generally speaking, you'll know. You see it coming, and you can kind of feel it in the air that electricity is building up. It typically happens with fronts when they blow in, or those little pop-ups in the middle of the summer. Those seem to carry more electricity than any of them. Wind-wise, I mean, it's so hard to say, man. I mean, if you're in a protected area, 30-mile-an-hour wind isn't that big of a deal. I've fished it in kayaks quite a few times. It depends on your abilities. It depends on your experience. It depends on your kayak. You know, if you're in an old Tarpon 160, that's a narrow, long, fast boat, it's not near stable. You're in one of the big pedaling kayaks now that look like a barge. It shouldn't be that big of a deal. You can't turn one of those over. You can fall out of them, but you can't hardly turn them over.
Yeah. I'm thinking, you know, let me ask Caleb this. You know, when he said, when do you call it? You know, he's talking kayaks. Scott was just talking about it. Also from our perspective, when we're on our big boats, knowing when to call it. I also think it depends on time of year. You know, a lot of people, I'm over the get beat up and get wet and ride out the storm days of my fishing life. Because part of it is I can go in, ride it out, come back out right away because I got a little place down there. But also time of year, some of these storms, you have to really watch your GPS if you have it, your radar, your phone or whatever, because some of them are just going to be boom, done, let's go fishing, and it's really good fishing behind it.
Yeah, and especially in the late summer on our coast, you can wake up in the morning and be one little thunderstorm, and it passes, and you go out, and you could get absolutely mollywopped. The good news is they typically form offshore, so you have a little bit of time, but I've had times where they formed between myself and both harbors I have refuge at, and I couldn't get to either one of them without getting pelted, and especially when I have customers, I have to really think about that, because the customers are typically jumping up and down on the dock, saying, hey, it's over, let's go. And I kind of have to play my I've been here, done that card. I had one this summer where a storm passed through at, like, I don't know, 5:30 a.m., right? And that's when I was planning on meeting my customers. And I show up, and these guys are all, they're standing right there at the ramp. They got their rods in their hand, and the storm is just passing through. And the best weatherman on the planet is a fisherman. I don't care what you say.
I agree.
And that I got out of my truck, and you could just feel the heaviness in the air. You could just smell it. You know, it just had that feeling. And I told those guys, I said, you know what, we're going to sit here another hour. And one of them kind of got upset with me, said, well, all these other guys are leaving. I said, you watch them come back. And it was about 45 minutes later. I posted pictures on Facebook of lightning hitting things in the harbor. It was rough. So yeah, time of year can be a big deal to it, but you know, look at the forecast, and it's often wrong. But whenever we've got that disturbance, it can be something to think about, because a lightning storm, I can name five people that I don't know them, but know them by second nature, that have been killed due to lightning, and yeah. it's just not worth it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not it's not something to, you know, to take lightly. We've all had those war stories. Scott, I mean, you've told a couple of stories here, but at the same time, you've also, you know, been out there in the weather. Is there a rule of thumb for you outside of the normal, check the radar, know what time of year it is, and how likely these things are to kick back up?
Oh, we're just so much more informed now
than we used to
be. So like he's saying, you know, fisherman's a great weatherman, but we used to sit and watch it so much, you know, and we'd try to figure out, okay, which way. It was the pop-ups that really got us. You know, those are the ones that they can get pretty ferocious in the summertime, and a lot of lightning and water spouts and all kind of stuff pop out of them. Generally, they're not all that big. They're not huge in coverage, so you could run and get away from them.
Yeah.
With today's boats, we're much faster now than we were then. Everybody's got a bigger motor than we used to run. And much more reliable. So running from a storm isn't that big of a deal now, as long as it's those little pop-ups. The springtime storms are the ones that get you, as far as I'm concerned. Those are the most dangerous ones. The cold front storms this time of year, we know they're coming. The cold front's moving. It moves at a steady pace. It comes on in. the springtime ones, they're so unpredictable. You see that front.
That's what I'm saying about time of year. The summer, spring are two different animals as far as I'm concerned.
That spring one, man, they pop up and then they speed up and they come flying in. And those are the ones that typically will have that 30, 40, 50 mile an
hour. Till the chickens come home.
Yeah.
Till the chickens come home, they'll be popping up. What were you going to say, Caleb?
You know, Scott and I visited about this when we were fishing that tournament together, and it was so bad. We were riding one out in the boat, and he was telling me when he was a young man how hard it was to run from storms with steam engines. He said it was real tough.
The big paddle Rowboat. Wheel got in the way. The big paddle wheel was just a big problem.
We had strong shoulders for the rowboats.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So this one you sent to me, Scott. I think I saw it on the web page on the Bite Me group page, and y'all can join there, and we'll let you in. And it's great discussion to have. But it was really I thought this was a win. I mean, I thought this was an absolute win. Hey, Scott, got a crazy story for you. Could be a topic of discussion. So we fished a tournament in Matagorda, drove down Friday, stopped by the harbor, picked up a new pair of Bart's Bay armor boots. His were worn out. Fished Saturday about 2 hours into the first wade, stepped on a stingray, and it felt like someone punched me as hard as they could on my foot. I knew instantly that the barb went through the boot. Booked it to the shore, zipped down my boot, and my boot was full of blood. So I took off my boot and saw a hole in my foot. Long story short, I got really lucky in a certain way. I had the boots on, but unlucky that the stingray still went through the boot. Now, let me tell you what my thoughts were when I read this, Scott. And you have been hit by a stingray. And correct me if I'm wrong. I still think that's a win. Because if you really – it sounded like he got hit by a stingray. And if those boots weren't there, he had probably ended up in a hospital. And he would have known a lot more than just, taking some pictures and putting on Facebook that he got a little bit in him. It wasn't great. But then my other thing was, I can't imagine any pair of boots. Correct me if I'm wrong. We love Bart's boots. Is perfect for these things. There's always seams in them. And if they get you just right, they get you.
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be some spot in it. Back when I got hit, all we had was those little shin guard looking things that wrapped around.
I still have mine.
And my hit was on my instep. There wasn't anything available at that time that would have stopped it. Mm-hmm. And I can attest, they hit hard. Yeah. You know, you think, okay, he's going to spin it up there and he's going to slap you with it. And, it does. It feels like somebody's punching you. And they do it more than once. You know, the one that hit me, it felt like a daggum sewing machine was just bam, 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 bam.
God
and
almighty.
Drove it to the bone.
Mm.
It
sounded like he got hit really, really directly, but it still prevented what could have been worse.
Yeah, I mean, it obviously could have been worse if he hadn't had them. Mm-hmm. Like I said, mine just drove it to the bone and then broke off.
Yeah,
sounds like his didn't break off, so you're lucky there. Without seeing the boot and without, really looking at it closely, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
I know that he was sending the boot to Bart's so that they could take a look at it and see what the effect was.
They probably want to see, happened. I would think. What do you got, Caleb?
It'd be most a huge of the, stingray too.
Yeah.
Most of this stuff seems geared towards more of glancing a strike off than a direct one. I read something that's been years ago now that a average size stingray hits with 500 pounds per square inch. And to compare that to a 6 foot rattlesnake hits with 50 pounds per square inch.
Wow. So, say that again.
And,
500 pounds versus 50 pounds?
Per square inch. And again, that's something I read. I haven't been out there, but they did all kinds of tests. Scott saw it way back when, where they would put all the ray gear on a 4x4, and they had a ray and a bathtub, and they would, poke him with it, and he had to hit it. But that's an awful lot of power coming. And when you think about the size of the point of that barb, that much power in that point, it doesn't seem unrealistic that it could punch through just about anything out there. If it hit at an angle, I think maybe it glances it. But if it's a dead on, all that force is going straight to that boot, I can see that being an issue, no doubt.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And that said, for both of you guys, I'll start with you, Caleb. We all like to wade fish, and we're not discouraging it, but you just have to go through your checklist. It gets so easy. As much as you wade fish, I'll bet you sometimes you still have to catch yourself. Well, hold on, I can't be so casual about this, right? I mean, you got to be very aware.
Yeah, my biggest, because I don't wear Ray gear. I used to wear it all the time, but whenever I got to fishing multiple days in a row, it would wear me out. It would kill my legs, and I just couldn't do it. And my biggest offenses are when I'm walking back to the boat, because I'm usually in a hurry to go get the boat, and you know, I'm picking up my feet and just stomping along. But the thing that freaks me out the most is when I step in a hole.
Oh, yeah.
You know, shuffling your feet or not, you step in that hole and there's a stingray laying in the bottom of it. There's nothing you can do about it. I've stepped on one or two here and there, and they didn't hit me. And I'm quite sure I've stepped on a flounder once or twice that just scared the bejesus out of me.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, my day is coming. I know it is. I bought health insurance this month, so I'm ready for it now.
Scott, what, you know, you're probably like me. I'm extra careful. I do wear the Ray Guards. I need to get some good boots, to make it a little easier. But we all get casual because either we're on fish or, like, I do exactly what Caleb's talking about. All right, I'll go get the boat, boys. And you just kind of start hustling, and you lose your kind of conscience of what you should be doing.
Well, the majority of them that get hit are stepping back.
You know, yes.
They're fishing, and they're moving along there. They're shuffling their feet. They're doing the right thing. Well, you're creating a mud trail, and those stingrays will follow that mud trail. And they're looking to feed, and you're stirring up the bottom. You're stirring up food for them. So they're right there behind you, and they'll settle in right behind you. You set the hook. One of the first things you do, you kind of step back when you set the hook real hard. And that's when the majority of people I've talked to that have been hit, that's what that happened to them, as they stepped on it while stepping backwards, fighting a fish.
That's one of the first things my father told me way back. I mean, I'm talking late 70s, but don't ever go backwards. Just slide your feet forward and turn around, make big loops. And so it was true then, and it's true now. You know, while we're talking about wade fishing, I forgot earlier, Wade Ride, our guys, Tim and Jason, they have the same thing. That Bite Me 20 promo, just for being a listener and being a part of our group page, a lot of our friends are like, hey, we'll take care of them. That includes Wade Ride Fishing. Go to coastalfishinggear.com and type in on the Bite Me special, which I've gone through it. It's huge. It's awesome. And you get 20% off. Just use the code BITEME20 right there. All right, boys, here we go. We're going to have good weather. I don't know how much you've been talking Caleb. But you know, talking to all the guys down there, it's going to be good. I think things are starting to kick up pretty nicely. I'm getting my new boat tomorrow from the boatyard. Jake and JT, I'll be heading down there, taking it through its paces. It's a gorgeous boat. So let's start with, what would Caleb do? You know, you're on the water, you got all your buddies. Wherever you are on the Gulf Coast, what Caleb is thinking, it could very well apply to you. What would Caleb do this weekend if he's getting out there?
Man, the weather looks pretty stinking fantastic through Saturday. Single-digit winds, looks real good. I would probably, my thing would be, I would probably go out in the afternoons and I'd be drifting, looking for birds, stuff like that. I think that the doctor might let me do some stuff this weekend, maybe.
Not a baby, so, not a baby.
But I'm...
Want to hop on my boat?
Right. Maybe we might do it. I'm limited. I'm limited to only an hour or two.
Yeah.
I think that the air temperature, the high is 83 on Friday, 83 on Thursday, 83 on Wednesday, light variable winds. I think that, redfish schools could get in session. I think that, birds could get on trout in the bay. I think it could be a fantastic weekend to not go home with wet underwear on your drive in.
That's exactly right. All right, this all started with what would Scott do? What would Scott do?
I'd be prowling those back lakes still, just hunting, you know, looking for those splashing shorelines and looking for my little white birds to be working the edges. They're working my yard, actually.
Well, you got water there.
Yeah, I got a lot of water. We had 10, 12 inches of rain here, but it all fell directly on the bay more. It was more of a coastal rain. It didn't rain inland, so we don't get a big push of water coming down the rivers. Mm-hmm. So that's not going to affect things nearly as much. I heard reports of 10 and 12 inches last week.
Good.
Some of those back lakes might have freshened up a little bit. Maybe over on the island, I'd probably start over there. But I'm just going to be looking, you know, I'd be looking for those birds to be working the shorelines, walking along there, fluttering and following redfish.
I think it's going to be a fun weekend as well. If you can get out there Friday, get out there Friday. Just because
personally, I'm going to be walking the banks of my little pond here because the doctor cut me loose with I don't have that big foam block under my arm anymore.
Oh, that's good news.
I still got a sling, but I can actually move my forearm pretty good.
Yeah.
And I can flip that little spinner bait out there. Yeah. My bass have been popping the top or all around the edges.
Yeah.
Bass are getting really, really spunky.
They look frisky. I saw some of your pictures.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. All right, Captain Caleb TV, I know you've been sort of laying low here for a little bit for a number of reasons, Caleb, but I'm sure it's given you time to start pondering what you want to do next on Captain Caleb TV. What's going on?
Man, I have some stuff coming up I'm going to do that is essential fall gear, essential winter gear, essential wading gear, all that kind of stuff. There might be some changes come to the channel. I've seen some articles pop up online that YouTube is looking to demonetize all fishing channels because we depict the torture of fish, even though my channel is largely about helping the fish. So there may be some changes come. I'm going to keep the channel going. We just may have to come up with a different area. And while I've got everybody's attention, mm-hmm. if you have a trip booked with me next week, shoot me a text. Let's talk about it. I may or may not be ready to get out there and go, but please, if you listen to this thing, I've had a couple of people that do listen that have been on their way and I've had to talk to them. So use this opportunity to communicate with my base.
All right, well, it's fun. You can join the group page on Bite Me on Facebook, which was down this week, and I was like looking at some topics and some messages like, oh my god, I was freaking out, but fortunately I save them as I get them. Scott, all good with you? You got your foam whatever brace thing is off, and Scott Null Photography is where they can go get some Bite Me gear and your pictures as well. All right, boys and girls, this is a fun one. We really enjoy doing this. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to send us those questions however you want. And it's really going to be good. I got a brand new boat. I'm going to be out there probably all day Friday, all day Saturday, into all day Sunday. You see me come wave, I'll be in Matagorda, but up and down the Texas coast. Y'all catch a bunch of fish, have a great time, and we will talk to you next week.